Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Economically Yours. I'm your host, Charmi Shah. And today I have with me Mr. Neville Shah, who's come under Forbes 40 under 40 in, I think, 2017 or 18. Correct me if I'm wrong, Neville. But he's a self-motivated entrepreneur, an expert in international B2B environment business. Neville is a value investor and a venture capitalist. And he's also a voracious reader and an avid traveler. That's just way too many fields, you know, for someone as honored and as accredited as you are, Neville. But I mean, with over 12 years of experience across categories, be it as a sales manager, key account manager, operations manager, and you know, the likes of it, you are in full entrepreneur package, if I have to, you know, sum this up. So you have a wide range of expertise, Neville. I've gone through your profile and I know that for a fact. So before I, you know, delve deep into that, could you walk my listeners through, you know, your journey, your background experiences? And but before you do that, I would like to just put this out that I'm honored to have you on the show and I'm delighted that you're a part of Economically. So welcome on the show, Neville. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Charmi. Thank you for this wonderful introduction. To begin with my journey, I would also, in order to start before, I'd like to say that I'm still a learner and I'm still trying to learn with all the accolades and this wonderful introduction that you've given me. My life started off under the training of an entrepreneur initially. So with me, I started off at the age of 16. With this particular journey of mine. And I happened to be in the field much later, but my training for an entrepreneur started at a very tender age. So I was been thrown out, been basically thrown in the ocean and been taught to figure things out rather than me just going about a structured way. So my experience at a very tender age was with certain categories of glass manufacturers as traders. So, and later on, I was trained under, and then I started off on my own. Now, the industry is basically we are industrial glass manufacturers and exporters. We run about 1,000 dealers pan India. And we export in almost 14 countries, so that's what we are in a nutshell. My company also does a lot of investment. I'm more of a proprietary investor in the markets. My journey started with the capital markets way back in 2006. When there was the 2008 financial crisis, I was very active. But as a learner, I started off this way back around the start of the millennium, you can say. That's so many years I was actually learning. You could say from 2000 onwards to the start of the new millennium, I was learning the markets. I had very few investments in around 2001, 2002. But as scalable as it was, started off by around 2006 actively. 2006, 2008, I was really on my horses. So that's how it started. It's been a good learning curve, I must say. More than the kind of money or success it shows you, it just teaches you the very most humble lesson that the market is the driver, not an individual or the perception. And you've been interviewing quite a lot of stalwarts of late, and you know that their opinions might be different in many contexts, but the end goal and the principles and the fundamentals remain the same.
Yeah. So, but when did your journey, okay, I understand that, you know, you entered the markets and how your journey, how you progressed towards that particular role, but when did your journey as a venture capitalist begin?
Well, as a venture capitalist, it was around the 2008 financial crisis. Mm-hmm. It's when I took an entry point. So.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of investments through the learnings over the years have been in a way where I've always put equities as a forefront. Also, the whole scenario of investments at that point in time was also on the lines of value investment. So you want to take a horizon of around 10 to 15 years. You want to have quality companies. Again, the beauty is that it actually gives you the opportunity, and there was so much wide range of data that might not be available previous to the new millennium. But post the 2000s, you have a lot of data about companies, and it was well structured, not as well as what you have right now in terms of the websites and updates. But at that point in time, you literally could feel in terms of and find good quality companies and read about it. So for me, the whole idea of being in the venture capitalist is the idea of learning through stocks and the companies, quality companies, be it in different sectors and the businesses that they do and the positive revenue that they generate over a period of time.
Ecosystem has changed with respect to what it was when you started, right? And you've been in the industry since, I think, over 2 decades now. So what transition have you witnessed over these 2 decades, and how do you think the current industry ecosystem has changed, and what is your outlook on the same?
Let's in before the markets, let's have India as a macro picture. And I would say as macro and micro, let's just talk a little bit about that. We are in a phase of Amrit Kal, as you say, and the next 20 years is definitely, and I'm very optimistic, it's definitely India's, and it is showing. We see the whole perception of companies, and we are the number one smartphone, we are the number one data consumer. We are second in manufacturing smartphones in this country. You have Apple being the example we have, right? So that's one. And we have the world's third largest ecosystem in terms of startups, which is we've raced through a lot of countries, and we have a history in terms of the green budget. So if you see the annual budget in terms of green energy, and the work that is going to be done 10 years from now, it's highly scalable in this country and as compared to the global world. So if you see Britain, if you see developed countries like Britain, Singapore, for instance, they look at India for a solution on green energy. So that's how optimistic are we are in the infrastructure sector. If you see, we are building airports. The Shivamoga port, we have the biggest metro line construction from Mumbai to Delhi. We have our prime minister inaugurating it. We have biggest cruise rivers that we are building. We have the Bangalore Mysore expressway that we are building in terms of infrastructure. Now, we've also come up with a technology like in terms of ethanol production. We have ethanol mixed with petrol. So we're coming down on our budgets that we spend usually on petrol and the fuel at large. When we that reduces our import bills at a very very rapid pace. On the defense sector, we are very much involved in the defense manufacturing right here, which actually safeguards our import bills. Recently, we've had the G20 summit.
Yeah.
And we had global players walking into the markets, seeing India as like a very favorable destination of manufacturing. And they believe that collaborating with India is going to be a big future ahead for various companies. Coming to the markets itself, we see huge infusion. We see 11 crores Demat accounts in our very systems right now. That is a 34% surge to previous. When we say 11 crores also, compared to Demat accounts, I would say, which is hardly the population, I would say you're not even 8 to 10% of India. So we have tremendous individuals where you need to guide them in terms of investments and bring them back to the concept of investment. So even personally, if you ask me, it's a 34% surge, but If you got to see 11 crores is how much compared to the population? It
Yeah.
is so hope. We have 15 crore folios in mutual funds. Besides that, especially in equities, we have a lot of inflows, and the inflows keep on rising. That is around 42% surge. So there are a lot of individuals who are very optimistic for the markets. They look forward to investing at a larger scale. If you see, the nominal GDP increase in this country has also increased tremendously. We have excellent trade happening at a rapid pace. Also, we have the UPA, we have Singapore now. Our currency is globally accepted. The UPA linkage with Singapore does great to our currency. We have the GIFT City working on derivatives. So we're likely to have more inflows. I think with so much happening so rapid, I believe that the India holds a really strong future, especially with markets in the positive direction. So we see a lot of speculation, but I'm talking in terms of quality stocks. We see the markets popping, and we see a lot of momentum. However, we are optimistic on the forefront that it's going to be fabulous. We from a long-term perspective, it's an ideal scenario to be in.
So, we discussed a lot, and there's too much information with respect to why we see India optimistically and why we see that the markets will reward long-term investors. But as we know that with greater reward comes greater risk, right? So what do you think are some of the risks that we are facing currently in the current macro scenario? It could be anything related to the global headwinds or any tailwinds that you think.
In with more than risk to reward, it's very important for investors to be picking up quality funds, to be seeing it for a, from a perspective of a long term, at least for around 5 to 10 years. There will be volatility, and volatility is the name of the game in the markets, because when you're a part of it, but the domestic demand in the country, in compared to the global demand as well, I see a lot of optimism in terms of quality companies delivering not only to the local markets but globally as well. Investment in these particular stocks would definitely give you a return in terms of long term, but if you're looking for, and basically as fundamentals, if you're looking for any short term gain through the market, people would feel that it's volatility. The real percentages that they expect out of the markets are not coming out. But if you see a long-term perspective, India has delivered, and I believe India delivered quite well even in the start of the millennium. 2008, of the world markets fared particularly miserable, but I would say India definitely stood the test times. I wouldn't say they delivered massive returns. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say that, like, as a perspective, but I see overall they deliver quite. From an investor standpoint, it's very important to consider various factors about companies that are going to take the software. If you take the manufacturing sector into perspective, you will see slight sluggishness initially, a little bit of volatility. But I think when you are the answer to the world in terms of delivering, in terms of exports, I might see an average TCS falling in terms of percentages, but in a volatile time, maybe because of the bank saga in the US or otherwise. But I would, when I see projects coming in for an average HCL or a TCS, I would see when they have projects in hand and they have quality people under them, where they deliver these projects on time and globally, because they're doing it across more than 75 to 80 countries. I see that the stock and the company and the management is definitely headed towards a positive upside. So hence the messages more to understand the markets, more to study it for a while, and then put your money and bet your money long term in good quality funds or good quality stocks.
But do you really think that, you know, so in the last couple of months, we've had a lot of macro, you know, with respect to a macro financial scenario, like the Deutsche Bank crisis, the SVB crisis, and the likes that have happened across in the West and in parts of Europe. In hindsight, today, we see that that's not have had a major impact on the Indian ecosystem, but there's no stopping such events in the future as well. So where do you see India, India's resiliency forming up with respect to such macro events?
I feel it's got to do internally with the country and the investors that have been part of their part of the world. I feel personally, it has very less impact on the broader terms or the broader macroeconomic stability of our investors particularly. I don't think they impact as much. Credit Suisse has its rivals even in Switzerland, just like the UBS. Historically, there has obviously been $2 billion worth of deals happening constantly. But these are internal between banks to banks from different foreign countries. However, it might affect some companies in the short term, as I said, like TCS or Infosys or Wipro, which are our tech companies, because they have parked their funds there. But again, in context to what output they deliver through the companies or their execution in terms of the projects in hand, I don't think it should affect much. Because again, in my personal belief, the macroeconomic fundamentals of our very own country is very, very strong at the moment. Compared to the world gauge, if you had to gauge the world at large. So in my opinion, we are well regulated. There are good laws for us through RBI or SEBI at a regular basis, even on the global front, which safeguards our exporters, which safeguards our investments or projects that we do abroad. So I see very, very less impact of, the Silicon Valley Bank, or you have the Deutsche Bank, or Credit Suisse, as a matter of fact, very less impact on our markets. Very few.
Right. Got it. Okay. Dissecting a little bit away from equities, because India has a huge financial markets ecosystem, right? And equities is a very small part. What forms a huger part of this ecosystem is the debt market, the fixed income market that we all know. What would be your two cents as your outlook with respect to the debt market and the fixed income ecosystem that's, you know, being formed in India with the indexation removal benefits that has happened, that has come into place? I think that's going to have a possible impact on the retail investors who are investing into, say, debt mutual funds. But again, at the same time, looking at other aspects of the fixed income market, we have the flattened yield curve today, you know, that's giving an attractive rate of returns today with respect to investing into bonds. Apart from that, we have the FDs today that have come in, and again, they are also offering very attractive rates, with senior citizen rates going to as high as 8.2% as well. So are investors today shifting their focus away from equities into the fixed income markets today, given the volatility as we just talked about? Or, do you think there's a mix of both still and people will tilt their favor towards equities only?
Sure. So I personally believe what we are discussing is fixed income is one of the categories that one investors should opt. And if you consider, it's basically in the end diversification, but you should consider both, in my opinion. And I basically categorize fixed income into short duration funds. You have target maturity funds, you have company FDs. What I'm talking, not bank FDs, but company FDs as well. The Mahindra would also, Mahindra offers UFD, Bajaj Finance offers UFD. These are also attractive. Their interest rates are slightly higher compared to the banks offer. So that's also a good medium of investment. And it's one of the baskets, I would say. And it should be taken seriously. I mean, like, if one has to make sure that they have tax-free bonds, they have short and medium-term debt segments that they invest in. Non-convertible debentures are also likely a good option. You know, it is important to deploy your capital in less riskier assets and more favorable. Allocation is to be done strategically accordingly. But you're absolutely right when this is one of the instruments. You might just lose a bit of or probably a lot of equity exposure, but it depends on how you allocate. So this is one concept the senior citizens love to talk about, and on a longer run, they feel that it's a right move. I completely agree with them, and being try to avoid a little bit of volatility. But in my opinion, I feel if we are catering to the young. And if you're catering to the youth, I started off personally with 80% equity exposure. So if you can, if you can, the whole idea is make sure that you don't fall. If you fall, you should be able to get up again. That's very important. So you make sure that you take that call, but slowly and steadily as you age, that's how the percentage differs, but yet I've seen a lot of good riskier senior citizens that love playing on equity even today, and one should. But it depends on appetite, and it depends on how much you are exposed in terms of reading about the market and how you enjoy your investments. I see a 35% exposure into the equity markets when you are more fixed. Was the fixed income, but there should be good amount of debt mutual funds. You have mutual funds, you have ETFs in gold, and certain international funds also be a part of your investment. So you can hedge well. So if you feel that if there is one of the other markets going up and down, you are hedging well in terms of that, you know. Investors are usually paying higher capital gains, and this is again a big issue we have right now. You must have come across nothing has been we don't get the leeway in terms of even the debt funds. They're equally taxed. We've come under the bracket. So as long as you're putting, because there are a lot of deployments, debt funds, so the government would tax you on that, and it's good if you diversify to target maturity funds. You have the medium-term debt funds, you have the gilt funds. These are various options. In order to have a lot of AMCs, which I feel that they are doing fabulous in balancing. One is SBI, ICICI, Kotak. These are basically category 2A, I would say, alternate investment funds that they would help you if you look into diversifying international funds or gilt funds. These are category 2 AIFs, basically alternate funds. And you also have category 3 AIFs also. There could be a different range of them as well. The credit opportunity funds are also one which you could look in for. You have certain funds which are global, but they are mainly on the hedge style, as I mentioned. Like, you know, the if you love to hedge in the short term fund, these certain funds are also very lucrative in terms of a long term investment prospect.
And we've had a discussion on equities and the fixed income market, and I have you on the show, and you're a venture capitalist, right? So it would be a sin on my part if I do not discuss the startup ecosystem as well with you. So can we transgress towards that as well? And you know, I want to understand from you, where do you think we are with respect to the startup ecosystem today? Like it's an alternative space of investment for HNIs and new HNIs in India today. So I want to discuss all things, you know, the glam and gloom of startups that's there today, and is entrepreneurship picking up rapidly today? But I mean, I know it's picking up rapidly today, but is it something that's, you know, happening in a good space of time, or what is your stance on that?
The startup ecosystem is always a million-dollar question for the youngies. They believe it's something they always love, very passionate about. I am equally passionate about that, I would say, but there are a lot of buts to it as well. So I have like a lot of personal reservations. Startups are a good environment. It's also got to do with it has to be more discussion on value based. If you are individuals don't discuss too much of value, they discuss valuations. So this needs to
Oh,
change for them.
okay.
Yeah, so you need to discuss a lot of value as to how you're going to penetrate into this. And this is my first take about startups. No, in our country, as I said, we have the maximum amount of unicorns. We are scaling to beat China, and we are trying really hard. We're like we surpass various developed countries. We've surpassed Japan on this also. So I believe there is a great future, but there has to be a lot of change in terms of conversations. They need. We are the country we can produce a lot of sharks. I believe I'm very optimistic about it. I'm very optimistic about the youth coming up with greater ideas of value creation. Sometimes somewhere there is like this chicken and egg sort of a situation, and I'll tell you how. What happens is investors looking for quality businesses through startups before they invest. And the startups need funds to start bringing that quality on the table. So it's like a chicken and egg sort of a situation, usually with this. And that's why the desired funds are not coming, or maybe their businesses or their particular strategies are not being welcomed, and all of it. No, it is even from a venture capitalist standpoint, it is tough times for startups, I would say. Like when we talk about large cap companies, for instance, or we talk about small cap companies, where they have this headway because they are in the capital markets. So it's and for someone to actually make their way up, which I believe there are a lot of good ones. Like you have certain IPOs which might not do good. You might have your Zomatos or Paytms striving through the capital markets, but they're holding themselves up. They're holding their. So I think that is more like a takeaway, whereby an individual could hold himself. And I think we as like a ecosystem have it in us that we can definitely work our ways up, talk and see how well you're going to generate value. And that is the mantra. How am I going to make my consumer's life much more happening through whatever product I'm creating? So that valuation business, I want the youth not to run too much about it. Just see ways in creating value in the business in front of you and you're through. So in my personal opinion, it's not about fancy cards, or it's not fancy letterheads or fancy offices, and it's more about the product and the value it'll bring into consumers' table, and the money and the numbers will follow. I'm very optimistic about it.
But having said that, what do you think is the biggest opportunity available for the startup ecosystem today, for entrepreneurs today, and what is the biggest challenge as well?
The biggest opportunity, and I would say, is the market itself, is the people. The ecosystem in India, the local trading market is bigger, and the biggest is the overseas market. So we come from the we come from a world of jugaad, as you call it, of frugal innovation. We Indians are great at that. We can create value to the world by having quality products. I think if you even if you see our exports have peaked up, like post it's very surprising that post COVID, our exports have picked up, and even this financial year our exports had around 22% growth. So I see from a product standpoint, I think we can definitely create value to the global markets. And India as a market in itself is so huge because of the population and its demographics, and we are the biggest youth in the country. So we have what we call as great minds. We have they're there, and they're definitely there to cater. However, on the hindsight, there are a lot of valuation issues. Is the money going to the right startup? Is it going to the right investor? The right sort of product line. Is it developed in a way which is creating good value to the consumer? That at a particular stage, I feel, is not being delivered on ground. That is one big challenge I feel. But at the other side, what impresses me is that the youth of the country is a very quick learner. You know that they bounce back, and it's also a positive side. And this chicken and egg situation, why are they looking? You know, if you're looking for a Series A funder, he wants to have a Series B. He wants to see value on the table before he puts a dime into it. And there are certain people who are very, very of the, they want their returns in 3 years. That's also a situation, but it takes a business 3 years to cement itself, you know? So this is also a situation. But there definitely, I see a lot of win-win happening as well. So optimism there is something one requires. And I think see the longer perspective, you investors, if they see a longer perspective in the business and value, then definitely we are a good ecosystem. I'm optimistic.
Right. Longer term perspectives and your optimism bring me to my next question, which is regarding your long term goals. So, throughout the podcast, throughout this conversation, I've heard that, you are an optimistic, you are betting on India, and you're looking at the longer picture. But what is your life's longer picture? What is your vision, and what are your long term goals?
At a personal front, I believe in the equity markets. I'm strongly very optimistic on it. On the hindsight, I would definitely make changes as I age. Right now, I feel younger, so I'm fine with not a fixed income diversification, but I hold it in strong regard. More than that, how to answer this question, I would say it's a good opportunity to constantly learn and evolve, and in terms of parking your money in the right space. I even at a personal perspective believe in quality companies. Even today, but when you read about the top 10 holdings in I consider green energy. I see the future in EV. I see good optimism in the retail sector in this country, the consumables. I see a lot of optimism even in the manufacturing sector. But though the manufacturing sector, you need to have a perspective which is long term. You will see a lot of volatility in that particular sector. But and IT. These two sectors, I would say you need to have a long-term perspective. There will be short-term volatility. And even in the overall market condition, even in this financial year, you will see a lot of volatility. But mutual funds, I want quality companies, a part of their funds, where I would park my money in. And I definitely see a long-term perspective at least a horizon of 10 to 15 years in good sizable returns. But yeah, very optimistic even in the oil and gas segment of this country. We're definitely with, as I pointed out, the we've got a way of ethanol blending, and we've got a way where we can do good justice to whatever we import. And I think seeing that from that perspective, I think it's great. So these sectors I look forward to.
Perfect, perfect, Neville. I think that's been a well summed up conversation with you, and we've been able to cover a lot of topics in the limited period of time. So thank you for doing this. I'll just end it quickly with my signature rapid fire round. So five words, phrases. Yeah, shall we begin?
Sure.
Okay, so my first word would be India's equity markets.
Positive.
Okay. Current valuations.
Check. Keep on checking.
Okay. A sector that you're bearish on.
Sector that I'm bearish on. There are quite a few. I'm very bearish on consumables.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The startup ecosystem in India.
Working along.
Okay. And the last one would be Neville.
Neville, optimistic, I guess. You put it right, I think.
Yeah.
I'm very optimistic. So I like to believe that, one, the youth should be, and to the individuals they are watching, certain things that probably in closures I'd like to say, some tips I'd like to give, is that you should set goals for themselves, not dreams. So goals before you invest. Understand the market best on the basis of what you do. It is, in my personal opinion, and I take this as a lesson for life, before investment, just give yourself, I gave myself 5 years. If you're a little impatient, give yourself at least 2 years. But for 2 years, don't invest. Just study the market, in my opinion. Understand the market basics. If you know the basics well, and in spite of knowing everything, things will not go your way. But make sure you understand the basics well. So you, even if you fall, you know how to rise back, right? Research and, to conduct due diligence is very, very important. You select your fundamentally strong companies. And the good selection will come as much as you crack your brain in reading every company in detail. What they manufacture, where they sell, how they generate their revenues, and how consistently they've been doing YOY. If you are good to understand this, you know that it's a stable company. I will bet on an Asian Paints always. I'm very, like, I know, because over the years, who wouldn't bet on an HDFC or HDFC Bank? It's because of the money. Even if you're doing your mutual funds, always be wary about how the fund manager is, how his position is in the market, read about it. Interaction might not give you that kind of leverage, but even it gives you a guidance if you have the right sort of, companies that you're associated with. It's good to have an advisor at the initials. Don't try and do everything by yourself. At the initials, but if you become a pro, then why not? But at the initials, avoid risky low-price stocks. In my opinion, one should be avoiding these risky low-price stocks. People who are showing you unimaginable returns, please be very wary. It will take time to build your growth. Understand your risk tolerance. Important to understand your risk tolerance, and you need to diversify your investments from time to time. What else can I say? Control your emotions. Use your stop loss wisely. Be
disciplined.
Always be careful about leverage. So these are these few tips I have lived by. So I'd like to share.
Perfect.
Yeah.
No, I think these were some very valuable tips that I think people should leverage and should kind of acknowledge as well. And given the euphoria that we've had, the rally we've had with respect to the number of newcomers in the financial industry in the equity markets, I think people should open their ears and listen to these tips. I think this is great information of great area of and sea of information that I've received on this podcast and this conversation particularly. So thank you Neville for
You're welcome.
coming on board and being a part of Economically Yours. I'm delighted to have hosted you.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a fun interaction, and wish all your viewers a very healthy financial life, and everyone around, and all the very best to your channel. I think you're doing a great job, and may you flourish and be optimistic. Stay positive about India at the macro level. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Neville. Thanks.